Content warnings for this episode include discussions of Islamophobia, anti-choice, and anti-Semitism, as well as a childhood sexual assault mention.
Listening to Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take a deep dive into a horror film and talk about how it connects to queer religion and theology. I'm Pastor Emily, and I am a Jesus freak, just not that kind.
I am Pace, and sometimes I dance for the flesh. Yes, even I struggle sometimes, just so y'all know at home.
And I am Ross Blotcher, and this film could have easily been about me, me in 1994.
Thank you so much, Ross, for joining us. So for our listeners at home, we are joined by Ross Blotcher, who is the co-host of the podcast Oh No, Ross and Carrie, where he investigates and reports on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal. He's also a longtime member of the Center for Inquiry Investigations Group, which offers a $500,000 prize for proof of claims of the paranormal.
Wow.
He started out. Yeah, right? Right.
Have you ever actually granted the $500,000?
Not yet. Nobody's qualified. They keep trying.
And so he started out as a fundamentalist Christian who also fixated on aliens and cryptids, but never lost his interest in the world of belief. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
Yeah.
If our listeners at home, if you haven't listened to Oh No, Ross and Carrie, it is one of my favorite time shows. I probably started listening, I want to say shortly after y'all joined the Max Fun Network. So that must have been like 2014 or something. So
yeah.
It's been a while. But wow. Do you mind saying a little bit about the origin of the podcast and the maybe some of your favorite investigations or something for our listeners?
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to know what your favorite one
so far. Ooh, wow. Oh, that's so tough. Yeah, it's like you have to break it into categories. Like my favorite of this type of investigation. Well, we were just saying before the show that we've been doing this for 12 years, the Oh No, Ross and Carrie podcast. And I'm the Ross half. And Carrie and I met each other at the Center for Inquiry. We would attend lectures there and we had a book club there. And actually, the book club's still going. I'm actually the leader of the book club now. I've been a member since 2006. So, yeah.
Wow.
We were just, you know, two of the few young people who happened to be going to these kind of like skeptic lectures. And one time, Carrie said to the group, hey, who wants to go with me to this Kabbalah lecture? And I said, well, everybody else said, like, well, why would we go to the Kabbalah Center? We don't believe that stuff. That's ridiculous. But I was like, I want to see what they have to say. That sounds amazing. And the next time we came back, everybody circled around us and said, well, tell us all the details. What happened? And we start telling the story and they're just really into it. We're thinking, well, this is weird. You didn't want to go, but you wanted us to tell you about it. And we both kind of had this light bulb of like, oh, this, we could do this as a podcast. And I was a big podcast fan, but I thought, I don't know how I can contribute to this space. But we felt we had something original with firsthand investigations, with trying these things out and reporting on them. And that's what we do. We look at fringe science, spirituality, claims of the paranormal, and we find ourselves in really awkward situations and try to find the humor in that. So we've joined Scientology and then gotten kicked out. Now all the Scientologists are trained to recognize us and turn us away. We've joined the Flat Earth movement. I've tried ayahuasca in Costa Rica. We've drunk our own pee. We've been baptized as Mormons. There's just so many wild and crazy things we've done over the years.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So any favorites in the realm of, I don't know, any of it? Horror?
Yeah. Church? What Pace and Emily can see and you can't is me kind of like blowing my cheeks out and looking around wildly like, oh my goodness, how do I even approach that? I mean, goodness. It, well, one cool thing is that it's something I would want to do anyway, but now because of the podcast, I get an excuse to do it. You know, my wife will let me wander off for these. Happens. Right? Exactly. Yeah. It's a, this perfect, perfect alignment. And so things that immediately come to mind are like these UFO conferences that we go to, super fun to just kind of get to go hang out for 3 days and hear UFO talks. Mm-hmm. I'm into it. Recently, we had a big series on the ARC. I went to a homeschooling conference at the ARC Encounter in Kentucky, this recreation, life-size recreation. Yeah. I'm using scare quotes of Noah's Ark, you know, 300 cubits long or 510 feet in our nomenclature. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that was wild, like just to go kind of embed myself for those days and then get to unpack it later, look up all the things that they said and see how it pans out. Turns out in that case, not so good. So those are a couple favorites that come to mind. The Mormon investigation was really great too, because they're nice people as long as you're straight and do what they want you to.
Yep. Yeah. My first call as a pastor was in Utah, so I got to know LDS culture.
Okay.
Yep.
Pretty well.
And one of our episodes that kind of ties in with that was we covered the Twilight franchise on this podcast. And so the first episode of the Twilight franchise, we had someone who was raised in the LDS church on TJ Tranchel, who's a horror author. And he was telling us about all the connections between LDS theology and Stephanie Meyer's kind of Twilight series and stuff. It was really interesting.
Okay, I'll have to go back and listen to that because it's like I know that connection is there, but I haven't read the Twilight book, so I wouldn't be able to unpack that even if I did see it. So very cool.
It is. It's a good episode. Yeah, it's a good episode. And even knowing what I knew about the LDS Church from living in Utah, there was a lot of stuff that I was like, oh
didn't see that. Yeah. Okay. Fascinating.
Yeah. And for listeners at home too, if you I would say the ARC Encounter episodes, because of the whole homeschooling, because of the theological bent, just from listening to y'all cover that, I think would be a good kind of connection to the Jesus Camp movie, because there's some similar theological claims and some
big time
homeschooling, some mm-hmm. emphasis on homeschooling and stuff in that film. So it might be a good place to start if you haven't listened to On Rack before.
Yeah, good point. And I noticed in Jesus Camp there were some overlaps in talking points, and even people, like they had Buddy Davis show up on screen. I don't think they actually mentioned who he was, but he's this dinosaur guy who shows up at the Creation Museum that Ken Ham runs. Lots of overlap.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can get into some announcements, which the big two announcements first is this is the first kind of Holy Week special of our podcast, so like launching our season 5, which is why it's season 500, because it's Holy Week. But then the rest of our season is going to be on ghosts, so we're watching the Ghostbuster franchise and some other fun ghost movies, so stay tuned for those. And then with the launch of season 5, we are also launching a new Patreon tier, so if you want to support us, you can support us at the $5 level, which is the horror nerd level, which is what our Patreon has always had that option. And that's you get your one BooTube episode a month, which is where we cover a TV series. And then you also get a movie commentary episode once a month. But if you want to show some extra support, you can support us at the new $10 Patreon level, which is the horror butt level. And for that, you get recognize on the podcast at least once a quarter. We'll say your name and say thank you as a public way to say thank you for your support. You also get some occasional extra episodes, which for a secret season 6 is going to come in real handy, because we're going to be covering a huge franchise that has a lot of episodes that we can't all fit on the main feed, so you'll definitely want to be there for that. Mm-hmm. And a few other goodies. So just as an option for you, if you want to support us.
Special recommendations. The special recommendations, I don't think people really understand how fantastic Pace's movie recommendations are. Oh,
yes. You also get once a month horror movie recommendations from me.
Or from me, but if you want good ones, from Pace.
Yeah, that's what apparently my superpower, I've been told, is that I am like really good at getting... My encyclopedic knowledge of horror is really good at helping people find recommendations of stuff they haven't seen, or people who kind of want to aren't into horror, super into horror, but want to kind of like test out the waters, I can find stuff that can help be their gateway drug, I guess, into horror.
I mean, you've done it for me, so.
Yeah. So that's all there too. Mm-hmm. And then the favorite question of many of our listeners, and something we ask all of our guests when they come on the podcast, is if you have a real life church horror story. It can be we've had some people talk about like having exorcisms performed and all sorts of that kind of supernatural horror, ghost hauntings and stuff in church buildings. But more often than not, it's just like church people being shitty or horrifying to them. So like wherever that falls on the spectrum, if you have something you want to share, please do so. We'd love to hear.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, the church was pretty good to me. I can't complain on that level, though I certainly acknowledge all the bad that it does. And I will say in our podcast, we have had a really extensive series on exorcist Bob Larson and the courses that he teaches. So that's pretty fun. We've seen some live exorcisms. I remember growing up, I would hear stories about demons being cast out. And even at my own church, they had what's the equivalent of a haunting story, where they would talk about a demon that was cast out and then immediately the doors flung open, you know, this manifestation of the spirit moving out. So certainly I always had that kind of belief that those things happened, but mm-hmm. I never got to witness them firsthand. But one thing that did happen was in 1994, I went to a camp, a summer camp that was very much like what you see in Jesus Camp. And there was this group of bodybuilders called Radical Reality, led by this guy named Donnie Moore. And boy, there's a real story there. But there were a few of these like bodybuilding groups, like these really big muscly guys who'd go around evangelizing, and in this case, ripping up phone books and smashing bricks with their hands and curling frying pans, stuff like that. And the implication was that, you know, they're mighty because God has given them this power. Anyway, so
all things through Christ gives me strength.
Exactly. Was that Philippians 4:13, something like that? Anyways, now I'm going to look this up later and be like, oh, shoot. Anyways, he was doing his altar call, you know, this big guy who's also like the chaplain to the Oakland A's, and we're all coming up and wanting to be filled with the Spirit. And we're already Christians, but, you know, who knows what we're doing? We're trying to recommit our lives to Christ. And so he wants everyone to start speaking in tongues. And for a lot of people, this is really easy. And they're doing the thing and falling backwards and they're writhing on the ground. And it's just not working for me. And I'm like two in my head and I'm getting more and more self-conscious as other people are being slain in the Spirit and I'm not. So finally he comes around to me and I've already been coached to start like saying one phrase over and over. So I'm saying like, I love you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus. Just over and over and over again. So, you know, getting kind of lightheaded, kind of got my mantra, you know, I'm pointing out some of the factors I think that are leading to what happens here. But then Donnie Moore comes to me, he hits me over the forehead or pushes me back and people catch me as I fall backwards and I start speaking in tongues and, you know, I'm just babbling going on. And it feels kind of like later on, I would call it orgasmic, like that sort of like flood of neurochemicals and, you know, feels great. And so, yeah, who knows how long I was speaking in tongues for. It was probably like a minute, but it felt like a really long time. And that was my one speaking in tongues experience. So I'll add a couple codas here to this story. Years later, I was kind of tracking Donnie Moore because he was still evangelizing and I wanted to attend one of his rallies to see if we could repeat this experience as adults. And right around that time, there was a big controversy because he had a summer camp. And it turns out one of his like number two people was allegedly mistreating children, abusing them sexually. And he, you know, it looked like he knew about it and he was covering this up. So the Assemblies of God Church kicked him out. There was a big brouhaha over that, and he died by suicide, which, you know, big deal for someone who's been a, you know, minister his whole life. So that ruined my chances of seeing him in person and, you know, so much controversy there. And then the second shoe that kind of dropped on that experience was that I realized years later that my sister, older sister who's still very Christian, I didn't realize that, well, I knew she was there at that conference with me, but I didn't realize she was one of the other ones who was left standing and couldn't speak in tongues. And it didn't work when she got pushed on the forehead either. Like, she didn't speak in tongues, and to this day, she's very suspicious of that as a spiritual gift. So there you go. That's my little real life church horror story.
Fascinating. Now I'm like curious if there's like some sort of science around a combination of like getting into that sort of meditative state and the like lightheadedness and then just like a whack on the forehead. Like, is that the like
something? Perfect combo.
Something comes out from.
And the music going on in the background. Yeah, a lot of factors at play there.
Yeah. And that's a very kind of fascinating segue. Thank you for that story. But into Jesus Camp, the movie we're covering today, which kind of features a fair amount of speaking in tongues, too, I will say. And it's directed by Heidi Ewing. Any relation to you, Emily, that you know of?
No, I wish.
But Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady co-directed it. Came out in 2006. When's the first time you've seen this movie?
I have a story.
Oh, good.
Ross, so you know, one in our like drinking game version of this podcast, everybody takes a shot or a swig. If I have not seen the movie, except for to watch it for the episode, because I'm not a horror, I'm a horror Padawan, as we say. But this one I have seen before.
You have? Okay.
Yeah. We watched it actually in our Pride group in college when it came out. We watched it like, I think probably they like watched it once a year. And I was on, I think I was on study abroad for one of the years. So I watched it twice. And the second time I actually like had to leave because I was like, this is too disturbing. But it was, it was fascinating to watch because that was not how I grew up, mainline Protestant. Lutheran for those who want the names. And so I didn't grow up with speaking in tongues. I didn't grow up with any of this. I grew up with like church camp, and as we were watching this time, there are like a couple similarities and stuff, but like by and large, this was not my experience growing up. And so it was just like this eye-opening thing for me of like, this is what Christianity is for people.
Okay. Yeah. I dodged a bullet.
For real. Yeah.
Huh.
What about you?
I'd definitely seen it before this, like when it was still pretty fresh. And you're reminding me, Carrie and I had interviewed a former Christian who'd written a book about her deconversion a while back named Alice Gretchen. And she had said in the book that when she tried to watch Jesus Camp, it was too much for her. She just couldn't handle it. She wasn't ready to process this because it hit too close. And she said it took years before she could kind of go back and have the perspective to be like, okay, I can watch this without a panic attack. It's deeply affecting if you've been in it.
Yeah, I think I saw this for the first time. So Ross knows, most of our listeners already know, Emily's a Lutheran pastor in the ELCA. I was raised ELCA Lutheran, but now I'm kind of more agnostic, kind of in those realms and stuff. But I watched this when I was in seminary preparing to be a Lutheran pastor before I left that behind.
Interesting.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so a friend of mine, Grace, shout out to Grace Lauver, had seen this movie. And so she introduced it to me. And we watched it kind of at the time, like jokingly to like make fun of it as we were watching it along and stuff, but also recognizing some of like the horrifying aspects and all that in there. And I've probably seen it like 3 times since then. But this is the first time I've seen it in quite some time. So it was interesting to go back all these years later and just see what a wild ride it is. Especially like I lived in D.C. during the January 6th riots and all that stuff that was insurrection. There's the word I was trying to think of. Yeah. So like seeing a lot of the kind of like, oh, you can see kind of where some of these ideologies were during the Bush administration and how they've continued to evolve to get to the point to lead to that kind of insurrection or to feed into that, even if it's not like one-to-one correspondence kind of stuff. So it was just very interesting to watch it in a post-Trump presidency kind of.
Oh, yeah. Light. Yeah. In a way, you're kind of seeing the setup for it, sort of the divorce from standards of evidence and shared reality with your fellow country people.
Right.
Yeah, I just got to say, I love that this is a horror nerds podcast and that we're talking about Jesus Camp, because obviously it wasn't intended as a horror film, but it is filled with horror. Yep. So yeah, very appropriate.
Yep. Here we are.
I'm with you, Emily. I'm not a big horror person. And for me, the only thing that will pull me into watching a horror movie, I won't do it on my own, it'll be if it has a lot of buzz or if people around me tell me like, oh, it's actually like really smart, you know, then I'll be like, okay, I'll check it out if it's well made as a film. Otherwise, I'm just, not into it.
Yeah, Pace has been getting me more into it, which is why I can vouch so well for their ability to recommend movies. but it's, I got turned off from horror with Silence of the Lambs, because I watched it in the middle of an afternoon on a school break in college, and it freaked me out. It got too much.
A little too real.
Yeah. And so then I was just like, okay, I'm done. So like there's occasionally ones where like we're watching The Sixth Sense for this season as one of our movies, and that one I actually was like, I have actually seen this one before, because it came out before I watched the Silence of the Lambs. So that's my like, instead of before Common Era, it's before Silence of the Lambs and after Silence of the Lambs.
That's fine. Silence of the Lambs, great film. My son is now 21, but over the years, for me, one of the most fun things about being a parent is showing your kid movies. And as he's grown, I've shown him kind of like scaffolded films and always tried to like give him something that'll just scare him. And so Silence of the Lambs I saved until very late in the game. I think he was already maybe 18, but I showed him the Sixth Sense, and he still says like that it was too early. I showed him when he was the age of the protagonist, Haley Joel Osment, in the film. Oh. And he's like, I wasn't ready for that. That was too much.
Oh, yeah.
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 But it's funny that you mentioned Silence of the Lambs. I remember at that conference that I was talking about where I'd spoke in tongues, there was one speaker who was convicting all of us on how dangerous media is and the things that we're letting our eyes see. And he named specific films. And I remember he asked the audience, how many of you saw Silence of the Lambs? And some people sheepishly raised their hands and were kind of shamed on the spot for having done so. And when we got back, my mom threw away my copy of Aladdin and our copy of Superman 2, because, you know, those had been named as films that were not acceptable.
Interesting.
I was so mad about losing Aladdin.
Yeah. Love Aladdin.
Great film. But the problem was he had shown a clip of the Sultan coming out and saying, praise Allah. One scene, the Sultan says, praise Allah. That's enough to throw out our VHS copy.
Also, Allah is Arabic for God. Good job. Praise God. Getting rid of it. Yeah. Although I am with them now on Harry Potter. In a way that I was not when I first saw the movie. This is ridiculous. And now when we were watching it, Pace was like, well, she got something right. Like, her reasoning for not watching Harry Potter is very different from my reasoning for not watching Harry Potter anymore. But yeah.
Yeah, that series has created some unlikely bedfellows in that regard.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll get into some of the behind the scenes for this movie. After watching the movie this most recent time, I was trying to do a little bit of research, and I found that Becky Fisher, the woman in the film who kind of runs the ministry, has a book that's kind of autobiographical and is also kind of a response to a lot of the negative criticism of Jesus Camp. So, of course, I had to go and read that. And it's a very interesting book, but in it she kind of talks about the origin story of how Jesus Camp came to be, which is fascinating because a lot of people I've talked to would be like, why would she consent to letting these cameras film like her ministry and stuff like that if she knew what was going to happen? So she kind of talks a little bit about that. But basically, the directors had just co-directed a film, The Boys of Baraka, and it's set in this Kenyan school. And one of the scenes has these young boys preaching. And so that interested them, the co-directors, in going out and finding some sort of follow-up to talk about like how the ways in which like young people preach and do that kind of thing. And they came across the name of Becky Fisher. And so that's kind of what got them interested in making this film.
Oh.
And Becky, from her perspective, she thought it would be a great way to show off her ministry. And she really strongly believes, even to this day, that one of the big problems of the church at large, and evangelical churches specifically, is that they don't recognize the capacity for kids, for young children, to fully embrace the gifts of the Spirit, to preach, to teach, to heal, to perform miracles. And she thinks that's so her ministry is a way to show that, to reach kids directly before they reach their teenage years and are unreachable at that point, because of the way that the world impacts that kind of thing. So that's why she consented to make the film. And she said that when the film came out, like as they were filming, she started to realize that there was this kind of anti-Christian point of view that the directors were aiming for. But she continued to go with it, and to this day has never denounced the film because she thinks the good it shows and the amount of people it has brought to Jesus. And her book is filled with testimonials about people who've seen the film and been brought to Jesus. She thinks outweighs the negative ramifications of the film.
Well, I remember thinking when I saw it that the film was, I think, scrupulously neutral in its presentation. Like it just gave you an eye view with kind of like a handheld video camera, like, you know, not even great quality filming. It just made you feel like you were there attending this thing.
Yeah.
And it didn't really add a lot of commentary on top of it. It was just like, well, here it is. And I remember thinking, like, well, I imagine Becky would be very happy with this. You know, like everything is what they believe and what she's saying. I don't think she's taken out of context. So I bet they would all look at this and be like, this is great. Look what you're doing with the kids. Look at that little girl just bawling her eyes out with a red face. Mm-hmm. That's how much the Spirit is moving her.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of us look at that exact same thing. And that's like, the power of it. And
traumatized that kid is.
Right, right. I just got to say, my wife and I were watching this movie again, and we were wondering, well, what's Becky Fisher doing now? And of course, she's still at it. But we noticed she has a podcast called Equipping Kingdom Kids. And the latest episode is from late 2022. And I cracked up at its title. Why did Jesus came as a human?
Why indeed?
Yeah. Why did he came? too good.
Oh, gosh.
That's
it. We're all looking forward to his second coming, however that happens.
His second caming. Yeah.
Caming. Yeah. Yeah. Her, I will say, there must have been an editor for her Jesus Camp book, but even so, there were like some really like just misspellings and stuff here and there sprinkled throughout. But overall, it was like relatively, I feel like it had to have gone through at least one editing pass, but not enough to catch all of it. But from her book, go ahead, please, Emily.
Was it independently published, or, you know, like how Amazon can self-publish and...
Yeah. It was published through her ministry's publishing, which publishes a lot of her other books and stuff. So in a sense, kind of self-published, less, but not officially. Kind of that weird...
All right.
In between. But yeah, so I just wanted to quick say the five thing, like she has four criticisms of the film and then a quote to kind of cover it up. So the first criticism is about the anti-abortion, as she would call it, anti-choice, as we would call it, rally in DC, where and the Mike Papantonio interview, the radio presenter, and Ted Hager's church were things she had no idea about as the filming. Those were like the filmmakers kind of going out and doing that on their own, and taking the families to those events. She claims that nothing she did was political. I guess she just defines political differently because, you know, anti-abortion or anti-choice is very political. And a lot of the other things she claims in there that aren't political are political, like praying for the president. She makes a big thing about she would pray for any world leader, but judge thing. All
and
that
they
stuff.
Bring it. They bring in a cardboard stand-up of
right.
of George W. Bush
right.
Into the church. Yeah. Yes. Not political, my ass.
Yeah. Right. One thing she was really disappointed was left out were all the miracles that the kids performed over the prayer conference and camp. It was actually filmed at two different. So here's an example of something that I have two examples of miracles. The first example of a miracle that she claims was left out of the film is one night there was this really bad thunderstorm during the prayer conference. The kids all prayed for it to stop and it stopped as thunderstorms do. I mean, but clearly Jesus was involved.
Bless their hearts.
And another miracle, which she sees as a sign that God supports the movie too, and is glad, and that it's like a net positive in spite of all the criticism, was the anti-abortion speaker at the conference was apparently gave this elaborate sermon on the Dr. Seuss book, Who Wants Horton Hears a Who,
yeah,
which is like a person's a person no matter how small.
I heard that quote and I was like, I loved Horton Hears a Who because I love elephants because elephants are the best. And when he used it as like anti-abortion propaganda, I was just like, what is going on? It's
awful. How dare you, yes, sir? How dare
you? Right. But
yeah, well, certainly Ted Haggard did not age well for that right? documentary.
Right.
For anybody who doesn't know, he was later found to have used the services of a male prostitute. And I mean, A-okay, good for you. You know, as long as your partner's in on it, that's fine. Not our problem. But of course, with all his professing and the things that he, you know, said in this documentary, it looks pretty bad on Ted Haggard.
Right, right, right. One of the things Becky says in her book is when she was watching the film and she was shown the Ted Haggard clips because she had not seen them before and she wasn't there at his church where those were filmed. The first thing she thought to herself was, he's gay, which she interpreted as a sign from the spirit impacting her heart, telling her the truth of the matter before it came out in the public news, and not the fact that he was saying fabulous like 10 times in that short little clip. But
boy, well, him being gay is like low on the level of vibes that I got from him. He's just a creepy dude.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like the way he's
criticizing
talks.
Eli and all that.
Levi? Yeah. I was like, you didn't even hear Levi preach.
Levi, yeah.
And then you're just like,
oh, what he said to him was so dismissive.
Substance. Yeah. Right? I was just like,
yeah, use your cute little kid thing for now. That was awful. What a stupid, horrible thing to say as an adult.
Right?
Yeah. I was like, I'm all for like tempering a little bit and like cultivating and helping kids who feel called to preach, like, right, like, nurture and help them, like, get resources and those things. So, like, I wouldn't necessarily just be like, yeah, go Levi, but, like, to dismiss him out of hand just, like, because he's young and be like, oh, until you're 30, you can just act like a little kid.
Yeah, and even 30, that's a high number. For, you know, right, saying that you
mean,
can rely on
church,
your baby fat. Sure.
In the church, young adult goes to like 35. I just turned 36 and I was half expecting the denomination I'm in to like raise the young adult age again to 40. But they didn't. But they had been like, first it was 30, and then it was 35.
That's crazy.
And I was like,
just like France trying to raise the age of retirement. The church is off with everybody else. Well, and also with Ted Haggard, he just seems to lack social grace. Like, that's a really good example where he just clearly didn't know how to handle a basic interaction with one of his parishioners. And every time I saw him, you know, even years ago, I always wondered, like, how did you get to the senior pastor position?
Right.
I don't understand what the appeal is.
I mean, there is a like argument for the higher up you in like megachurch land, right? Like the more senior you get, the further away from actual interactions you get.
Sure. But even like I know some mega pastors and of some mega pastors, the Joel Osteens of the world, you know, they're pretty smooth folks and they know how to navigate a situation and answer questions. Yeah, it just seemed like Ted Haggard was this weird outlier who got to talk to George W. Bush once a week. Crazy,
right?
Yeah, you know, the seat of power. These people have influence.
Mm-hmm. But it's not political. It's just spiritual matters. Just right. Spiritual matters. Yeah. So, the Horton hears a who thing. So, the other one of the examples of the other miracle was she was upset that they didn't include the Horton hears a who sermon, but like that's copyrighted material. And he basically read the book and riffed on it. So, of course, they're not going to include them in the documentary. But what she was saying was after a when she got a newspaper talking about the premiere of Jesus Camp, Jim Carrey's version of Horton Hears a Who was also in the theaters. And Horton Hears a Who was in the newspaper right above the Jesus Camp article. And so she saw that as a sign that God was looking out for them and that the movie was blessed by God. So that's another example of a miracle.
She's got some interesting definitions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were some healings too, apparently too. But it was all like my back hurts today. The kids praying it, my back doesn't hurt anymore. Kind of level of miracle.
Healing.
And then she also said there's only one scene in the film that she thinks was edited misleadingly, and that is when the one speaker is saying who wants to be a martyr, and the kids are saying I do with like these grinning faces, and she says that the I do was a response to a different question he had asked.
Okay. I'll accept that that might have happened, but I mean, actually kind of good to hear that there was just that one. She was able to quantify that.
Right.
Yeah.
She said in the moment, the kids were all saying yes, but it was more of this like somber yes, as opposed to a gleeful yes was the... Right.
So much better.
Right. Yep. But then here's just this one little quote from her in the book. In the end, I believe this movie turned out exactly the way it was supposed to. I'll even go further and say, I believe it's exactly the way God wanted it to be. So what's on screen, I feel like we can adequately say is a reflection of what she wants out in the world. About what it depicts, how it depicts her ministry and stuff.
Also, my wife was looking at Becky's YouTube channel while we were watching this, and she pointed out that there's a video called "How to Heal a Cripple: Kid Friendly True Story" with a picture of crutches.
A cripple, in fact.
Great.
I love that language
that's lovely.
Disability.
Yeah, really good. With the times.
Also, yeah. I mean, even in the time, right? She named the camp Kids on Fire, and she held it at what in like English settler like names is Devil's Lake.
That they're all driving to Devil's Lake for this conference is just rich.
Crazy.
Right?
It's amazing.
And so they can all catch on fire.
Yeah. And they don't use it. The camp actually closed because there was vandalism because of...
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was, but it was after the movie. And so supposedly in response to the movie.
Yeah. And one thing too is she rented the camp. It wasn't a camp she owned. She had a ministry that rented the camp. So it was also kind of shitty that the vandalism was directed at a camp that.
After the film?
Yeah,
oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
As a counselor and board member, you know, with a summer camp, that's really not cool. That's sad to hear.
And I think in that time and space, like it was not the clearest thing from the movie that she just rented space there. But yeah.
Fair enough if you're not used to camp administration. But what I thought was hilarious was just seeing her and her team pray over the seats that everyone was going to be in and the electronics.
Right?
And that was a really fun moment watching this with my son, who has not been inculcated in all of this. And he's like, really? They're like praying that the devil doesn't affect the technology. And both my wife and I are like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. Definitely. You
right.
pray. Oh, 'cause any interference, anything that goes wrong, that's seen as Satan interfering intentionally.
Also, sometimes we're recording this the week before Holy Week. And so in my world, I'm like, maybe I should pray over our technology. Like, technology is great when it's great. And when it's bad, it just, like, everything falls apart. And I'm like,
when the copier stops working halfway through your bulletin printing for Holy Week, all that stuff. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
But do you think it's Satan doing that when that happens?
No, it's definitely not.
I remember when I left the faith, one of my big revelatory moments was I got into my truck one morning to drive to college, and it was it was broken. Like, it wouldn't start. And I was like so relieved because I realized, oh my goodness, it's just like a problem with the starter, the alternator, something. It's not because God's mad at me. I don't have to like deeply soul search and figure out what I did wrong.
Lesson that I
need to learn. And it was just like such a weight lifted. Realizing, oh my goodness, it's just a broken truck. That's so good. I could just get it fixed.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that is probably in some ways one of the more lasting things, that there is just this like heavy paranoia and constant like, you don't have enough faith. You're not faithing enough. You're not faithing right. Mm. Whenever there's mm-hmm. something that's wrong, that doesn't yep. let it, that like doesn't allow space for injustice exists in the world and it's bad. And sometimes it impacts you. And sometimes it's just a random thing and it sucks. And there's like no space for that in a lot of like what Barbara Brown Taylor calls full solar spirituality. Where it's like everything is good all the time, and if it's not, then you better figure out what's going on with your faith, because that's the problem.
Ooh, that is so unhealthy.
Yeah. Also, so Pace went the read the book route, and I went the Google to see where are they now route, and read a couple articles about the kids. And some of the articles are like literally somebody just tried to figure out what they could from the public posts on their social media. So there's not like a ton on all of them that's like reliable, because yes, they look well adjusted. It's social media. Of course they look well adjusted. Nobody's going to put like, I'm in a deep depression because I feel like God is punishing me. That's not what you put on social media. But so Levi and Rachel still seem to be going strong. At least Rachel is the like least known about of the like Levi, Rachel, and
featured
Andrew
kids. Okay.
Featured kids. Levi is like still strong faith, like doing ministry, is now married with a kid and another maybe on the way, or maybe two kids. Rachel, it seems like maybe got to a point where she almost walked away because she didn't feel good, which is part of this like the ecstatic experience of Christianity, right? And like those spaces where you have these like ecstatic experiences, and then if those stop, if you stop constantly being able to do the like dopamine kick of this experience of Christianity, then it's like, well, is God still present? If God is only present in the like joy. So she almost walked away at that point, but did not. And then Andrew is my favorite. When we were watching it, I was like, I have such a special place in my heart for Andrew, because he was the blonde kid who was just like really sad and who actually talked about doubting and like named that it was hard to believe in God because you can't like see God or feel God. He took a very different turn and ultimately headed off of social media, but also before that just like left the faith and went to California and got into psychedelic drugs and just kind of like left. Ultimately, he said that he didn't think that the camp was abusive per se, but because like, well, ultimately he said that he was glad that he went because it was a space where like they could actually talk about like things that were deeply meaningful to them, and that helped him figure out that he didn't believe in God. But yeah, he was the one of the three that like took a very different turn than probably Becky expected.
Yeah. And I'm guessing from my rough calculations that Levi is still young enough to be using his cute kid thing.
yeah, mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah, when it was like 10 years later and he was married or engaged, I was like, are you old enough to do that? And he got married real quick, but.
Hey, I got married at 18. That's why I have a 21-year-old son.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah. yeah, I definitely was not in any place married at 18.
Most of us aren't. Hey, it worked out for me, but I wouldn't recommend it for everybody.
That's true.
One last quote I want to read from Becky's book, and then we can just like go around and talk about like parts of the movie that whatever we want to say basically about the movie. But this quote from her is when she's talking about how people were saying she's brainwashing kids and how awful evangelicals are for doing this. And her response to this in the book she wrote, "For the first time in my life, I could truly relate to Jewish people seeing how a Holocaust had its embryonic beginnings." And just this notion of evangelicals are so persecuted in this society that a lot of evangelicals hold on to this feeling of being persecuted, even though that's not quite what's happening.
That is the opposite of what is happening in this particular moment in the country.
Yeah, no kidding. I remember, you know, that sense of being the persecuted majority, where like in one breath they would talk about how strong the church is and this movement, and you know, they'd lay claim to that whenever they could, but then in the next breath they would devalue that and say, well, we're actually persecuted and the powers are aligned against us. It's like, well, which is it? You really can't have both. It's kind of like Trump reevaluating his property values based on whether he was trying to do taxes or get loans.
Yeah. And I think that's, there's a lot in that particular space where, like, I'm in the middle of watching the, like, QAnon documentary that came out, I don't know, a while ago. And I had not realized all of the connections between QAnon and, like, the Christchurch, New Zealand attack on the mosques. And and so it's, like, putting together a lot of pieces, but also, like, having that as the kind of surrounding context of Jesus Camp, I was like, no, like, you're setting up for, like, there's the militaristic, like, whatever they're doing in, like, camo that they're, like, dancing slash fighting slash something. But, like, all of those different pieces that set up for, like, the way that homeschooling teaches kids to hold these views that are, like, incongruent, where it's like, you're the majority and also persecuted. This is clearly just a belief because they call it a theory and that's how science works. And, but this is fact because we believe it. And it's just like that part that like messes with logic and reasoning and like curiosity and critical thinking. And yeah.
And I wonder, Ross, since you grew up evangelical, you said this could have been you in 1994. So like this is, so a lot of these type of, one of the things I noticed like throughout the film is like a lot of dualisms, a lot of us versus them kind of language, and Jesus is clearly on our side. And then, but even that dualism of like, this is man's decision and that's bad. And then there's God's decision, which is good. And so like, there's always this dualistic nature of just human nature in and of itself is inherently sinful and evil or broken. And you really need to strive past that for God's nature, those things.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was definitely the constant message that was always reinforced. That there were so many little things that I saw in the documentary that, you know, just had instant recognition for, like the chick tracks, you know, like they're sitting at the bowling alley.
Oh yeah.
This girl, you know, I think that was Rachel, right? The young girl who goes and ministers to the blonde lady. Yeah, I remember that awkwardness of constant pressure to go talk to people and then to pass out tracks like these. And they'd give us these tracks that had these little black and white illustrations that would show you, you kind of goofus and gallant style, what happens to people who don't make the right decisions and choose Jesus. You know, like all of this just looks so familiar to me. Oh, like Carmen, they played a little bit of music. They were singing the "Who's in the House, JC," and so they were playing that for the kids. And so I start singing along with this, and my son's doing this kind of head tilt thing of like, "Why do you know all the lyrics?" Because I had that on VHS tape, and and we had been talking about Ted Haggard. My wife was saying like, "Well, you want somebody who's flamboyant? It's Carmen, who is the singer." And I was like, "Oh, I never thought of that. He just seemed very manly, and he had all these crazy music videos for Christian songs." So we spent a little time Googling him. But anyways, yeah, there were so many familiar things, and you know, a decade later, they were using all of the same material and talking points.
And the poor secondhand embarrassed, like you said, it's like those awkward encounters where you're like pressured to minister to people and stuff. And just like how awkward all those, like I had just so much secondhand embarrassment for the kid. Like, oh,
totally.
What are you doing? You poor, like,
I remember there was a scene where Levi's walking around. He's wearing like a Reese's peanut butter cup, but it says Jesus instead of Reese's.
Yeah.
And I was like, yep, I had a shirt that said it had the Visa logo, but it said Jesus, he's everywhere you want to be. It's like, yep, that was me.
Nice.
Yep. Oh, I remember like that whole series of like t-shirts, stickers, all of that stuff. That was like fairly mainstream Christianity, I think. But I was just gonna say, I also like in thinking about Rachel and that pressure to evangelize and like who gets picked to evangelize, right? Like the person in the bowling alley, like, okay, some random person who's at the bowling alley. There's not a clear like reason why her and not anybody else. But then like towards the end when Rachel is trying to hand out stuff and she goes over to this group of black men and is like, hey, do you know, like, and they're like confident that they are going to heaven. And she's like, sure. And like all of that stuff. And then is like assuming that like they're probably Muslim. And then.
Yeah, she says that as she walks away.
Yeah. And then
they're probably Muslim.
The white people who like walk by and don't take her pamphlets and like don't give her the time of day are Christian for all we know. And this, like, just those assumptions about who, and I mean, you hear this from queer people, especially all the time, of like, oh yeah, you will come and try and pray for me because you think that based on how I look, I need to be saved. And like that.
You're a lost soul.
And the ways that like that, like even Becky, when she's talking to the two kids and she's like, why did you come? And all of that stuff. She asked them both like why they came and stuff and then only talks to the white kid. And then like says bye to both. And like that could be a cut thing of how the movie was cut, but I was like,
well, there were like only like three kids of color that I would counted as I was watching the film at this entire camp too.
Like, yeah, I noticed like, oh wow,
white.
Yeah,
there are a couple black kids there. Oh, there, she might be of Indian descent. But yeah, I remember that other boy mentioned that he had an identical twin, and usually that would stop any of us and be like, "Whoa, what? You've got a twin? Tell me more about that." But no, good point. Yeah. She kind of moved on.
And I also want to like name that there's a lot of Islamophobia in everything she's doing and saying. Like, she definitely focuses on like lies, so untrue things about Islam, and talks about like Judeo-Christian values, which is a made-up thing that has never existed in this country for the explicit purpose of excluding Islam from any of the like sorts of conversations or anything like that. And with a little bit of irony that like Jesus is part of the Holy Scriptures for Muslims and not for Jews. And so there's like a little irony there that like actually if you're trying to find like a common point with Jesus, you're more likely to find it in Islam than Judaism. But also, if you're curious as a Christian about Islam, there's a fantastic study that Lutheran Social Services of Minnesota came out with that will in the show notes, that's called My Neighbor is Muslim. And it does a fantastic job of like taking different topics, and then there's like an essay from a Christian and an essay from a Muslim, and they're both like professor talking about their faith. And so it's like Islam and Jesus, and so then it talks about that, but it also talks about Christians and Jesus, and so you get the like conversation that it's not just like what do they think, but also like think, well, what do I think compared to other Christians. It's fantastic, highly recommend.
The easy disregard of Islam, I think, lives on. And I saw it at the Ark Encounter. There was this big talk after the main homeschooling conference that focused on, well, both constitutional literacy and gun ownership, but also on anti-abortion stance. And there was this man who gave the speech, a black preacher, but still one of the lines that he said was, "The God of Buddha is gone." And I thought, who's the God of what? And the God of Muhammad and Islam is gone. And but the Bible tells us that every knee shall bow, you know, and he goes on. But I just thought, like, what a casual phrase that he tosses off, revealing he doesn't know anything about Buddhism, but also, you know, the God of Muhammad and Islam is gone. Huh. Okay. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's still alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I know this was also one of her talking points too, and she gets to this in the book a lot, but you also see her say it in the movie, is radical Islam, like this category that she is kind of believing, like the Fox News bits on, I guess, kind of mm-hmm. get that kind of style of whatever radical Islam is. But they are training and indoctrinating their kids at a young age, so we need to do the same or else they will win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a constant refrain and something I saw at the Ark as well, this kind of establishing of parody, saying, well, they're doing this horrible thing, therefore we need to be doing the equal and opposite thing in a defense or in counteraction of that. But then when you examine that initial claim, it doesn't pan out, you know, like they're not brainwashing the kids with evolution. They're not, well, in that case, okay, yes, you can point at certain madrasas and stuff like that, but how should that be our model of what we do with our kids?
Right.
When I remember, like, in thinking about how I live out Christianity, there, like, less so now, but certainly when I was younger, there was a big aspect of it that was like, but this is what the conservatives are doing, and I can see the harm that it's causing. So how is talking to kids about progressive values different or better? And like, there's a lot more nuance, right, of like critical thinking and teaching critical thinking. And that's part of like how I would teach a kid about progressive things within Christianity. But there was definitely like that, like there is an aspect for, I think particularly for Christians, that like, how do we counteract this that we see as harm without replicating it in a different way? And that's like, there's false equivalencies and like false, like the radical right and the radical left don't exist. Like there's the radical right and the left that is like just barely left of center now because the center has shifted so far right. So there's just like those dynamics, but it's interesting to think about like how we justify and how we differentiate very explicitly from conservative Christianity.
I feel like I know a lot of atheist parents. Many of them, I think, do come from religious backgrounds, and they bend over backwards so much to not indoctrinate their children. And I can sense like this discomfort with telling kids anything with such certainty that, you know, they'll carry it in their minds with this kind of weight that we see in this film. Which, you know, it might be a bit of an overcorrection, but I think is sort of a healthy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that really stuck out to me in this was the like bodily autonomy space of like, it comes out most explicitly in the abortion, anti-abortion stuff and like misuse of Horton Hears a Who. But also like Becky starts it out with like fat phobia and ableism, right? She's like, well, they're fat and lazy and don't want to be Christian, don't want to do the hard work.
She made a really big thing about fasting and like the Muslims can fast, but you know, can you fast? And it was a weird message for her to be emphasizing there.
Yeah, I was like, okay. and then like she...
Why are you trying to get kids to not eat?
Right? Because it will put them in a different mental state, more likely a vision. That's what I think it is. But I don't know.
Okay. Might be onto something, right? There.
Like, yeah. But she just talks about it. And like Pace was talking about this earlier where she was like, they're so open. They're so usable in Christianity. And it's like, they're just chess pieces for her in this like bigger game. And it's like, no, actual kids have like our people. Are the actual people, not the little plastic fetuses, but like actual kids are human beings. And there's just this like, you're supposed to be used for this greater purpose. We're going to not properly dress you so that you can stand outside in DC and put tape on over your mouths so that you can't even talk. And the way that like that particular, like the way that homeschooling was working, like the way that they're like, oh, this is not this, this is this, and like don't hold the space for what are your actual thoughts? What is your own like desires and thinking, critical thinking?
Especially because he just had that series on the homeschooling conference at the ARC Encounter and stuff. Could you speak a little? They talk a little bit about it in the movie about like the importance of homeschooling because it's a way to teach the truth about the Bible and stuff. But they said some statistics, which I wonder how much those statistics have shifted about the percentage of people who are homeschooled are evangelicals, especially
post-COVID. Yeah, they said 75%. Yeah.
Any tidbits you could give us or like insight into some of that?
Yeah, I can't give you the latest stats on that, but I feel like 75% sounds about right for the percentage of homeschoolers in the U.S. who are evangelical Christians. It's, you know, it's the majority, and that's why they get their own textbooks and curriculum and everything like that. It's a big pool. And when I went to the ARC, it was even a subset of that pool because Ken Ham is the guy who created this, not only Answers in Genesis, the organization that owns both the Creation Museum and the ARC, but, you know, all of this homeschooling curriculum that goes with it. Anyways, he's all about creating divisions, you know, and like declaring who is not fully in line. So he spends half his time going after other people in the church. It's not just the secularists he's after. Mm-hmm. So I got feedback from listeners saying that Ken Ham is controversial even in the homeschooling space because there's only a subset that will sign on fully to all of his doctrinal requirements. So it's a big enough pool that you can have this divisive Christian group within it with a specific emphasis on Genesis 1 to 11 and his interpretation. And it's still a pretty big thing that can support multiple publishers. So big space.
In her book too, this was actually helpful for me because, like I said, I wasn't raised evangelical or anything and raised mainline Protestant. But in the book, she kind of talks about how she defined the difference between evangelical, but then she has Pentecostal Christians and she says that there's an overlap, but she sees them as two different things. And she is Pentecostal because Pentecostals believe that the Holy Spirit is alive and well and active now and helping children and everybody perform miracles here and now, whereas evangelical don't emphasize the miracle aspects of it. So I thought that was interesting that even she was kind of like saying the difference between the types of Christians and she made a point, and this is something I've heard from in a lot of like evangelical kind of talking circles, is that mainline Christians and Catholics especially are not like true Christians because they do not believe the Bible in a certain way, even though they're just Christian in name only, is a phrase she used quite a bit. So
how do you abbreviate that? Sinos?
The rhinos.
Exactly. That's interesting because I don't think those terms evangelical and Pentecostal are mutually exclusive, but I think she summarized that well. Like Pentecostal goes back to Pentecost and the arriving of the Holy Spirit. So they're all about being filled with the Spirit, whereas evangelical is all about propagating this outward and sharing with others the act of spreading the gospel. But to your point, I do remember being told that Catholics were not true Christians and that they're idolaters because they worship Mary, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I remember a young leader I did, if was in high school, and one of the Young Life leaders talked about Catholics that way. And I grew up in my congregation, my Lutheran congregation, worshipped in an interfaith chapel. So we, all of these different denominations shared space, including a Catholic church, a Jewish congregation, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, Baptist, all sorts. And so I remember her saying that, and like, my grandmother was Catholic, and I was just like, where do you even get that Catholics aren't Christian? Like, no, they're Christian. And I just like could not comprehend how she had arrived at that like
And that's why to do this effectively with kids, you really have to keep them cloistered off from everybody else. This requires exclusion. And so it's harder to do this sort of thing like in a big city where you just naturally interact with more people and you have a higher chance of having a neighbor or family member who is of one of these denigrated yeah. faiths where you can go, well, wait a second, I know her and she's a wonderful person. So that doesn't map out. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, speaking of like the difference in ways people, Christians view certain things, I'm very interested in, Ross, if the church you were a part of as a kid or as you're growing up was anti-Harry Potter as well, and for similar reasons or different reasons or any of that kind of stuff, yeah. Or was it even not something talked about?
Well, and I was, you know, a little early on the Harry Potter. When did those books even start coming out?
They really started to get big and when Scholastic started publishing them in like the 96, 97, 98 period, 99.
Wow. I managed to avoid them for quite a few years. I remember people around me saying how they were bad and evil. I felt like I got multiple voices on that. Now, I was raised in Assemblies of God for the first 10 years of my life. And then I spent 7 years at a Methodist church, which was very different, far more towards mm-hmm. kind of the Lutheran ends of things, more liturgical. I wore the robes. I was an acolyte. So had kind of two very different experiences. And that was because I would go to church with my dad. But then on Wednesday nights, I would be going back to these Baptist and Assemblies of God and Christian and Missionary Alliance churches and getting doses of that as well. So I would hear different voices. And I think as a kid, you just assume that everybody's in lockstep and you don't make those distinctions of like, oh, there's like a faction that feels this way and a faction that feels that way. Mm-hmm. So it's like whoever gets to you first, you just kind of incorporate what they're saying. So anyways, I don't know if that's much of an answer, I can say my nieces and nephew, my sister is still very Christian, is raising. They're not allowed to watch or read Harry Potter. And, we had the DVDs and one time my niece was visiting and she asked my wife, can I just look at the DVD covers? And my wife's like, knock yourself out. That's fine. Yeah, we don't care. Yeah, it was so sad. And then they hadn't seen Indiana Jones.
Oh,
like, come on. What are you doing to these
even
kids?
Even with like the Last Crusade, very much like Jesus is real and all this
but
stuff.
But of course, Tolkien is totally fine, even though, you know, there's orcs and, you know, all these dark things. There's sorcerers, you know, none of that would be allowed, except it's okay because Gandalf, we know, is not a wizard. He's an allegory for the Christ mm-hmm. figure, you know, so it's okay.
And just like Chronicles of Narnia is similar too.
Yep.
Yep, exactly. those are wonderful. Let's read them all the time.
Mm-hmm. I love that seed though, her little sermon about grabbing the tiger by a tail. And so she starts off with a stuffed animal of a leopard. Mm-hmm. Then she's swinging around a lion and the whole time she's referring to it as a tiger. So just love that kind of.
Yeah. That was.
Are they all the same kind though in the ark? Are the big cats? Because of the kinds? I don't know.
Yeah. The kinds give them all the freedom they need to lump and split and get the what they ended up with was 1,398 different kinds that were represented on the ark. And they felt that the ark was plenty big for that. So, mission accomplished. Yeah, it's a very weaselly little science that they've created, quote unquote.
One other thing in the realm of like the anti-abortion, we were watching it with friend of the podcast, Susanna Porter, and she was the president of Now New Jersey for a while and did a lot of like political organizing and stuff. And so like when they brought out the little plastic fetuses, she was like, those are the fetuses they used to throw at me. And so like, there was a piece where we were like trying to see if she was in it, but it was like not the right timing for when she was organizing in DC specifically. But like
wild.
That, I was like, yeah. And my perspective as like someone who worked in the hospital as a chaplain was like, that's not what fetuses look like. Like I have seen miscarriages and I have seen stillbirth and like, you're making them look a lot more human than they look at those stages.
You might call it a miscarriage of science. Hey-o.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll be here all day.
That was so good.
Yeah.
Now I'm wondering if they make them in gummy form, because that might be fun. If they threw them at you and you could eat them.
Oh my God.
Live into the baby eater stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mmm, babies. Oh.
I bet they do. I bet there's a mold that you can make like gummy fetuses.
Yeah, you know, I may have to look this up now. That sounds pretty good.
Love it, love it. Yeah, it's no joke. Like, I worked in the Senate very briefly, but lived in D.C. for 3 years. And, like, it's no joke. On the pro and the anti-choice protest days are just, like, wild to be in D.C. And just, like, the train cars are just packed of kids with, like, the metro and stuff with all these anti-choice slogans and signs and stuff. It's just, it's a very weird time to be in the city during those protest weekend.
Wow.
I don't really have anything else. We already talked about Ted Haggard too. And also he was, I think part of it was he got arrested, not just because of the hiring of prostitute, but also purchasing meth.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So
forgot about that.
Yeah. Anything that Ross wanted to point out or talk about in the movie that we haven't gotten to yet?
I just love how it's always the loudest to feel the need to proclaim about, you know, the dangers of homosexuality or not being binary, mm-hmm. are the ones who have these closeted deep issues that they shouldn't be taking out on us. Yeah. I just remembered another thing that kind of stood out to me as a family, as we were watching this, that they were saying the pledge to the Christian flag. And that was one where my son was like, wait, what? There's a Christian flag? And not only could we agree that there was and that we were surrounded by it all the time in our classrooms, out front of our schools, but we could say the pledge along. And it was kind of a crazy moment for me because I'd forgotten there was a pledge for the Bible. We didn't do that as often.
I did not.
But when they started saying it, I could also join in and be like, oh yeah, I actually do remember this. That's crazy. That was somewhere hidden deep in my head or my heart, according to the pledge.
Yeah. Wild.
Also, for the record, for our listeners at home, from a theological perspective, the Bible is not actually the word of God. Jesus is the word of God. That's why he said, touché. Like, John 1.
In the beginning was the Word. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the Bible
and the
is
word
like
was God.
The manger, the cradle that holds Jesus. That's the way that I was like taught it in a like, how do
very
we teach
Luther
the Bible?
On you.
Yeah. How do we teach the Bible so that people don't have faith crises when they get to college and take a Bible class?
I guess I can say the one Luther thing. Like, our drinking game is anytime I talk about Luther, Foucault, or Butler, they have to take a shot too. Because I'm a Luther scholar. I'm getting my PhD in religion and working on late medieval, early modern kind of thinking around anthropology. And Luther is one of the people who wrote quite a bit about anthropology and connection to God and stuff like that. So, yeah. So, that word of the Bible is the cradle that holds the word of God is a direct quote from Luther. So, of course, you have to take your shot now, everyone, because we got our Luther in there.
Wasn't he against?
Yeah, and Emily brought it in. Yeah.
Very good. Wasn't Luther against Revelation being included in the canon?
Yeah, yeah. Which is so funny.
Revelation, it was James and Jude.
No, it was Revelation too. It was James, Jude, Revelation were all put in the Apocrypha at the end of the New Testament for him. So he wasn't super happy with them for a variety of reasons. And then he also he was one of the first publishers of the Bible, person who translated Bible and stuff, to move the Apocrypha into a special section as opposed to having it of the Old Testament, as opposed to having it mixed in as the way that most Catholic and some Orthodox Bibles today still do have it mixed in differently.
Well,
he had strong opinions about
a lot of things. If I can just take this opportunity while I'm talking to someone who knows a lot about Luther, everyone take your shots. I know he wrote that horrible tractate called On the Jews and Their Lies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I heard somewhere like someone trying to do a little bit of a defense of him, saying that he had an episode in his life where he like had some sort of physical injury or something. And afterwards he sort of had a change of personality. And this might've been after that shift. Does that ring any bells for you?
No, Luther's theology was always very supersessionist. So he, in his early life, he spoke in defense of Jewish people and saying we should treat them with tolerance in order to win them over to the faith. It was always okay. This kind of like, we want them to eventually be Christian, but we can't do that if we're persecuting them. But then as he aged, it became more and more violent rhetoric, but it was always coming from the same supersessionist place. So I always am wary of people who try to distinguish, like, Luther only was anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic late in his life. It's like, no, it kind of was consistently. It became more and more violent towards the end of his life.
That's helpful, because it did feel like hand waving to me, but I didn't have the specific knowledge to.
Also, didn't his like that. Somebody else chose the title of that, right?
Oh yeah, that was a different one. You're thinking of the on the peasants before his peasant revolt. Right. I will defend him. I will kind of push back on people who say that he was against the peasant war, because that's actually not 100% true, but he ended up landing against it. But that was one of those that's a little bit needs a little bit of nuance. Mm-hmm. So
I'll just say, on the horror theme, one thing that really stood out to me watching this film was the constant references to the blood, his blood. We want this covered in the blood. His, you know, and like, yeah, that mm-hmm. kind of language was surrounding me all the time as a kid too. But that does not pass the outsider test of faith. Like, as soon as you look at that with different goggles, that looks so creepy that you've got all these kids and you're yelling at them about blood, the blood of our Lord.
Right.
Particularly ironic, since they're trying to ban menstrual products from schools. Yeah. And so then it's like, well, you really just want the blood everywhere.
Oh gosh. Oh dear. Yeah.
have you reviewed yet Midnight Mass for the show?
No, but that's okay. On my list.
It's to do. So good. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. That's a good example of a horror show where, like, I heard it was smart and I loved it.
Crossover with blood. Last year's Holy Special, though, speaking of the blood of Jesus quite literally and how horrifying it is. So last year's Holy Week special we did on the Passion of the Christ, and we reviewed it as if it were a horror movie. And it actually, like, it's filmed in such a way that had it not been about Jesus, it probably would be a horror. Like, it would be seen as like this body horror movie.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, like, at one point I had this realization, or someone pointed it out, that Mel Gibson has had this fascination with torture his whole career. And if you watch his films for that, you see it like in every film, there's some aspect of torture or him experiencing extreme pain. Very obvious in films like Braveheart and Apocalypto and stuff like that, but kind of present in places you wouldn't expect it to. Anyways, that film came out right as I was starting to doubt and leave the faith. And I remember going to see Passion of the Christ and wondering, will this kind of bring me back a bit? And no, it turned me away all the more. I was like, oh, this is gross. I don't want this.
We definitely watched it as a youth group. Activity.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I haven't rewatched it since. Yeah. So actually, it's on my list of films to watch with my son.
I rewatched it for the podcast last year, but I have only seen it twice, and I don't.
That was what we decided. Like, we had watched it for the podcast, and we're like, I'm glad we did that. And now we're never going to watch it again. It is not good in so many ways, but also not fun to sit through.
One, it was a really good conversation to have because of there's like the different, I don't remember exactly what we talked about, but like the different points of like intersection with like Mel Gibson doing the movie and like other things that were going on at the exact same time, and how Christianity and anti-Semitism and like all of those things were like concurrent and like is one informing the other, or is it just that they're both happening at the same time? We'll link in the show notes, like we do for all of the media that gets mentioned in our podcast, folks. But it was a good conversation. I'm glad I don't have to watch that movie ever again.
Yay. Are we to rating the film, or any last things before we get there? Okay. So because this is kind of the unofficial start for our Ghostbuster season, we're going to rate it out of 10 proton packs. So how many proton packs would you give this movie? We usually ask a favorite kill, but nobody dies. A few people are slain in the spirit, but like nobody actually dies. But so we don't have a favorite kill here. But anything else you just want to say as kind of like a concluding thought to the film. And we usually start with our guests. So if you want to go first, Ross, or if you need time to think, I can go.
Yeah, no, I want to hear your rationales for this this rating scale, and then I'll chime in.
Okay. I would probably rate this a 4 out of 10 proton packs as far as like the content and its like horrifyingness, and like the harm I think is that's potential in there. But as far as like a horror movie, I kind of rate it like a 7 out of 10 proton packs, because it has some pretty horrific moments. And also, like I was saying at the beginning, just watching it now, like post Trump presidency, that just watching in a whole new light, and the ways that we can kind of see the connections there. So that's how I would rate it.
That makes sense. I was having trouble too, because I was like, I don't know how to separate the movie from like the content of the movie. So I'm going to rate it in the same kind of style and pace, but I am going to rate it a 3 in terms of content, as in terms of Becky and all that contains. And I think I will probably, I'll also go with a 7 for like the movie in terms of like documentary horror film of the like evils and complexities of Christianity and all that scare us with.
Yeah. Okay. I won't give separate numbers. I'm going to say 6.
I
like that, as I said earlier, that this got included as a horror film, because I wouldn't have thought of it that way. But as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, yeah, I see it. And that's funny. I've got it kind of playing silently in the background right now. Ted Haggard is pointing at the camera saying creepy stuff. So
see, very creepy. That
might have just raised it. So, but this has the distinction of being like something in real life. So it's horrifying in that this is real. It's out there. Not maybe in the sense that it will affect people out there, like, you know, watching this movie isn't going to send you back to camp as a 10-year-old, but just knowing that this is out there and it's still a real thing is kind of horrifying. So there we go. That's my 6.
Perfect. So thank you so much for joining us. And Carrie is going to be with us too, but we'll try to get her in a future episode, maybe, hopefully. Do you have any upcoming projects? Where can the guests find you, find the podcast?
I was just going to say, maybe if you ever review the film Carrie, she might be the perfect person to have. I just finally.
Ooh, that's great choice.
I just finally watched that for the first time. And that has some religious themes too. But question, and thank you for it. You can follow us at onopodcast.com or maximumfun.org. That's our podcast network. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/onrack. And then Twitter at twitter.com/onopodcast. And then you can find us on Instagram as well.
Awesome. Again, thank you. And just because we're talking about a Jesus camp, and you mentioned being a camp counselor, would you say a few words about the camp that you are involved with? Because I think it's a really cool camp. So I'd love for our listeners to hear about it.
Yeah. Thanks for asking that. So it's called Camp Quest West, and we're part of the greater Camp Quest organization national. So if you're maybe in a different state, check it out. There might be one near you. But Camp Quest West, we have sessions in NorCal and Southern California every year, usually in June and July. And it's just an amazing time. You get to do all of the archery and canoeing and rock climbing and hiking and science projects and singing, but without any of the indoctrination we've been talking about this whole time, you know, and having come out of the experience of this film, I wanted something different for my son. And that's how I found the organization. And we've been doing this since 2012. And my son is now a counselor, you know, because he's old enough. And we've also got gender neutral cabins. Yes. And it's an open, awesome community. So yeah, please sign up and hope I see you there if you're in Southern California.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been such a great pleasure having you on the podcast. Our next movie is The Changeling, the 1980 classic with George C. Scott, kind of kicking off our ghost season with that. Mm-hmm. And that's it for our show. Our theme music was by Matt May. We release every Thursday. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Support us on Patreon and get access to exclusive movie commentary episodes, BootTube episodes, and more bonus content by going to patreon.com/horrornerds.church. It's only $5 to sign up, and so cheaper than sending your kid to the Jesus Camp, the Kids on Fire Camp in Devil Lake. Mm-hmm. Follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Horror Nerds at Church, and Twitter, HNACPOD, for all the latest updates about upcoming films, news, and other announcements. Until next time. Do you have a good one, Emily?
Yeah. I don't have a good Until one. Next okay. time, don't get any protoplasm on you or ectoplasm. Oh,
there we go.
I don't know what protoplasm like is. They were upset about it. I was like, ectoplasm, like from Ghostbusters.
Aw. Sometimes we dance for the flesh, too.
It's true.